Well, hey, church, how you guys doing this morning? All right, good, good, good. Well, one thing you may or may not know about me is the fact that I am very easily distracted, okay, just in general. It's like a problem in all areas of my life. It's just how I am. Just last night, I was out in my garage. I was working on my truck. I got like an electrical problem. Might be like a short in a wire somewhere. It's super annoying, okay? I'm trying to figure this thing out. And I realized every time I do like some sort of project, especially like in my garage, that I'm like, it takes me two or three times or maybe four times as long to do the project because I'm doing a bunch of other things that is not revolved around my project. And so I'm out there and I'm like, you know, I start just looking at stuff. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah. I start looking at some other things that maybe I need to get done, or I'll start, like last night, I start like putting away tools and stuff that I had out for my previous project that were still kind of laying around. And then what I start doing is, maybe some of you guys do this in your own minds, or maybe some of you ladies do this with the living room, right? Where I'll be like, okay, you know what? If I move my workbench over here, then I have more space over there, and then I could take my toolbox, I could put that there, and I could do this better, and that would be easier. And then I start looking around more at more stuff. I'm like, I should sell that. I need to get rid of that. That's really in the way. You know, I just need to throw that away. And I start going through all this stuff, and I'm just distracted. Okay, it's like my lot in life. It's just who I am. And it's the reason why I have so many unfinished projects at my house. Okay, I just got all these things going on because I've started so many things without finishing others. And I'm just distracted. Where I think this shows up most in my life, and I want you to think about where it shows up most in your life. But for me, it's every Friday. Okay, on Fridays, I have like a war each week. Like I come to work, I'm like, all right, ready for war, okay? I come to work and it's a war against distractions just throughout my day, because Fridays are my day that I have to sit down and I have to like write out a message, okay? On Thursdays, in theory, those days I'm spending that time, if I'm not distracted, I'm spending my Thursdays doing a bunch of research, trying to figure out like finding the direction of where I'm gonna go on Sunday, all right, for this. And so I'm working on all that. And then Friday, I got to take all my notes from Thursday and I got to compile them into something that makes sense. And as you guys know, some weeks I hit it, some weeks not so much, you know what I mean? Okay? I'm trying to make logical sense here to present and teach you guys. And so Fridays are just, it's just rough because I am not naturally good at sitting down at a table or a desk and doing anything for a few hours. Okay, let alone write a message. And so it's not fun. I don't enjoy it. I like agonize about it. And it's just very, very easy for me to get distracted by all the other things that are going on around me. And in fact, on Friday, I was trying to think, it was Friday morning, we're talking about distractions today. And so I'm trying to think about the things that distract me when I'm coming to writing a message. So here I am, I'm distracted while I'm trying to write a message on distraction. And it's kind of an issue there. And I was just like, well, what have I done in the last 15 minutes that is not like oriented around my message? And so I started like listing it out, start writing it down. I'm like, well, I checked my email. All right, I printed out a credit card statement. I watched this big oversized load truck go by on 224. I don't even know what that was. All right, I arranged the icons on my computer desktop. I don't know why I did that. I was looking at some pictures on my shelf. Then I went outside in the front and I took down some Christmas lights because we still have Christmas lights up when we shouldn't, and it's March, all right? And so I did some of that. It was a nice day anyway. Then I watched from the office. This loud plane landed right over here. And then I cleaned off my desk. I erased a whiteboard. I moved a refrigerator. I texted a few people. I made a quick call. And then I walked into Mike's office because he was on vacation, and just to see if he had any food or snacks or anything kind of laying around. And he did have some Ritz crackers, but I left him alone because the box was unopened and I just felt like that was unethical to open that. And so I plugged my phone into his office and left it in there so I wouldn't be distracted by that. Okay, so that's what I did in 15 minutes. All things that I shouldn't be doing until I get the stuff that I need to get done. And so I've noticed throughout life, and maybe you've noticed the same thing, is that the things that I get distracted by are never as important as the thing that I get distracted from. You ever notice that? All right? The things that we get distracted by are usually almost never important or as important as the thing that I get distracted from. And usually, for me at least, the things that I get distracted by, I mean, they're not like bad things, right? And in fact, some of them are like semi-important, okay, a lot of times. But they're just never as important as the thing that I get distracted from. See, today we're in part four of our story on Nehemiah. Nehemiah was an ordinary guy who lived in Persia about 2,500 years ago. And Nehemiah, he was a Jewish guy. He worked for King Artaxerxes, who was the king and ruled over Persia and really most of the world at that point in history. And this all takes place around 445, 444 BC. Now, over the last 3 weeks here, we have watched Nehemiah get permission from the king to go back to his kind of homeland. He wasn't from Jerusalem and had never been there before, but where his people was from, he got permission from the king to go back to Jerusalem and to help the city be rebuilt. Now, at this point, Jerusalem has been reduced to piles of rock, bricks, and rubble for about 140 years, okay? So that's a long time. And it has been rubble ever since Babylon, which was a world empire, a previous world empire, went in and conquered them about 140 years before. And Jerusalem has just basically been wiped off the map. And so Nehemiah goes, he's going to go help the Jewish people, what few Jewish people there are left. He's going to go help them rebuild their city. And when he gets there, I mean, it's worse than he ever imagined. I mean, it is terrible. Not only are people, again, we know for a fact, historians tell us that during that time there were people getting slaughtered, people, raids and bands, groups of people were coming down and they were stealing whoever they wanted and kidnapping whoever they wanted out of their homes and killing whoever they wanted at night. And then the daytime was marked by the roads of Judea around this region were just filled with the dead bodies of the men, women, and children who were murdered the night before. And so he gets there. I mean, Jerusalem is filled with death. I mean, that's reality. And the city's overgrown, and there's really not much left to the city. There's no economic structure. There's no real government, all right? There's no money. The people there, what few people are left, are extremely depressed. There's no protection, no safety, no leadership, no direction, and above all, there's no hope. And so he gathers what few Jewish people are left in that region, and he inspires them to start building the wall around what once was a city. And what they know is that once they get a wall up, then they will be able to start rebuilding the city. But they need the protection of a wall first, all right? The wall is important. It's a little bit different than how we view cities in this day and age. Back then in ancient times, your city needed a wall, and if your city didn't have a wall, there's no point in having a city. Because unprotected, anybody, any army could come in and conquer you super easily. And so they start building the wall and things go well for at least a little while. All right, last week we talked about how Nehemiah was hit with some opposition, okay? There's some leaders from some of the surrounding regions and provinces that were threatened by the idea of Jerusalem being rebuilt. And so they start working against Nehemiah and the Jewish people. And they gather their armies together and they have enemies. Basically, they have surrounded the city and surrounded the region of Judea. And there's nothing that the Jewish people can do about it. And so we saw last week as the Jewish people start getting discouraged as they're up on these walls building, they can probably see way off in the distance, these groups of people, their enemies gathering together. And so they get discouraged and Nehemiah has to rally them back together and get them to keep building and to not get distracted. And so that's what I love about Nehemiah. That's what I love about the story, right? Nehemiah is both spiritual and he's practical, okay? He prayed as if everything depended on God, which it does, but then he worked as if everything depended on him. All right, both spiritual and practical. And so he continued building with only this time he had a tool in one hand and he had a sword in the other. And last week we saw that the people achieved. They got the wall basically halfway up, about 20 feet high. And when it's finished, it's going to be about 40 feet high. This wall is about 8 to 10 feet thick, and it's about 2.5 miles long. And so they get the wall halfway done. Now, one thing that we haven't talked about yet, and one thing that was happening to the Jewish people during this time, is that the Persian king, King Artaxerxes, which again was Nehemiah's boss, he had mandated heavy and large taxes upon the people that he conquered, especially the Jewish people. In fact, Persia was known for their super high taxes upon their people. And so this was extremely difficult, especially for the poor Jewish people to pay their tax, okay? I don't know if you like paying the taxes. I personally don't. And so I feel for these people, okay? All right, I feel for them. So they have to pay these taxes. They're super high. And so what was going on was that the wealthy non-Jewish and really the enemies of the Jewish people, these are outsiders from the surrounding regions, what they were actually doing is they were loaning the Jewish people money because they didn't have any because they were so poor. And so the outsiders were loaning the Jewish people money at huge interest rates. Now, sometimes we complain about interest rates, right? Like, I don't know what a normal home mortgage is these days. Like, you know, we complain about 6, 7, 8%, whatever it might be, because it's not as good as what it used to be a few years ago, all right? This is, they're way higher interest rates than that, okay? This is around 50%, 50%, okay? So this is crazy. And this had wiped out the Jewish economy. They really had nothing. The Jewish people were then forced to sell their farms, their houses, their land. And in a lot of instances, they were forced to sell their children and themselves as slaves to help to have the money to pay this tax that the king of Persia required. And so when Nehemiah shows up, he used his own money to pay off many of those loans, right? So he shows up, you got all these foreigners owning a bunch of these Jewish people, which isn't right. And so he goes and he starts buying these people back with his own money. He probably spent a small fortune doing this to get the free the Jewish people who had sold themselves as slaves or sold their children as slaves. So he's doing that, which is awesome. But they start building this wall. But as the wall is going up and as they're making real progress, Nehemiah hears a terrible, horrible rumor. And after some investigating, Nehemiah finds out that many of the farmers are actually spending their time building the wall, which is good, right? But they're building the wall instead of farming. And so two things have happened here. Number one, they're running out of food to feed their families. Why? Because they're not producing any food themselves. During this time, there's a good chance that if they were spent all their time farming, they still wouldn't have been able to feed their families because there was also an extreme drought going on during the same time. And so they can't feed their families. But number two, they also weren't able to pay the tax that King Artaxerxes in Persia required. Why? Because they're not producing any revenue because they're not spending any time on their farms. And so what they started doing is they reverted back to borrowing money again to pay their taxes and to borrow money so that they could feed their families. But this time they decided to do it the right way in the fact that instead of borrowing against the foreigners and kind of their enemies surrounding them, they decide to borrow against their fellow Jewish people, which is good. But the issue is the wealthy Jews began doing the very same thing that the non-Jewish people, the foreigners, were doing to the Jewish people, right? They started taking the poor people's farms and fields and homes as collateral, and at many times they started taking their children and even themselves as slaves, as payments for these unpaid loans or as collateral. And so for the poor people, this has become a survival issue. Okay, they have to do something so that they can feed their families, right? They didn't have like government assistance. They didn't have anything like that. There's nobody to fall back on. They have no food, but now they're also losing their children to slavery and they're losing their farms and they're losing their homes and their land. So we could all agree, not good, right? We're kind of sure that's not good. Okay, it's just, yeah, selling your kids as slaves. It's not good. And so because of this, Nehemiah tells us that there was a widespread outcry from the people and their wives against their Jewish countrymen, right? And so this is not some outside battle going on here, although there are enemies gathering around the city that want to take the Jewish people down, all right? Nehemiah, at this point, he has to deal with the battle within. So the people are distracted, and they're distracted from the work by the injustices that are going on all around him. And when Nehemiah realizes what's going on, he tells us, he says, I became extremely angry, right? Remember, this is Nehemiah. He's writing a journal here that we still have today. That's what this is. It's his own words. And so we kind of get to see the inside of what's going on inside his mind. And Nehemiah's just like, I was so mad. When I found this out, when I heard these rumors, after I did some investigating, I was so mad, he says. This just really ticks him off when he heard the matter. And so after seriously considering the matter, he says, after thinking about it, notice what he doesn't do real quick. He doesn't react immediately. Did you notice that? Right, he doesn't react immediately. He doesn't immediately confront them. Right, he doesn't start typing that email. He doesn't send that text. He doesn't let emotions control him. But emotions are part of it because he's so mad. He's so angry. But instead of his emotions controlling him, he thinks it through. All right, see, some of us, we need to learn this, okay? Let's be honest. If we're honest with ourselves, all right, some of us, we know, we're like, yeah, I don't do that very well. You know what I mean? I let emotions control something. See, a lot of us, when we see something wrong, we see some injustice in the world or whatever it might be, it bothers us. And that's good, all right? It should. As Christians, when we see something that's wrong, it should bother us. But what a lot of us do is we immediately, I think the best word is just react, you know? We immediately react based off the emotions that we're feeling in that moment. And usually, we could all agree that that reaction usually is not good. In fact, sometimes the reaction causes more problems than what the original problem was. And so this is something that we need to remember, and we can look towards Nehemiah, and he gives us a great example. He controls himself, he thinks through the issues, and he comes up with a plan. Nehemiah, he stops the work on the wall, and he gathers all the nobles and all the wealthy Jewish people together. And he says, I accuse the nobles and the officials, saying to them, he's like, I just said to them, plain, like straight to their face, I'm just like, are you serious? Each of you is charging his countrymen interest? All right, you're loaning the money out, which is fine and good. But then you're charging this high, crazy interest rate that you know that they're never going to be able to repay? That's really what we're doing? All right, we're doing that now? Now, what Nehemiah knows and what these people should know is that if you read through the Old Testament law, right, God actually gives them very specific instructions of how to deal with personal loans. All right, when it comes to personal loans, not business loans, but personal loans, all right, the Jewish people were encouraged to loan each other money. Okay, they were encouraged to help each other out when someone was in really, you know, deep need. And in here, these people are starving to death, so it's pretty important. And so they were to loan each other money, but they were not allowed to charge interest to a fellow Jewish person. Okay, so you loan your money, you pay me back, we're square. Instead, what these people are doing is they're loaning their money out and then saying, oh, and tack on 50% because that's what you owe me. Something that these people the poor people were never going to be able to repay. And so he calls them out. He's like, you are charging your own countrymen, your own brothers, your Jewish brothers, interest. Like, this is so messed up. He says, so I called a large assembly against him. He gathers everybody together. He's like, all right, everybody off the wall, come on over. All right, we got to talk about this. And he said, we have done, and when he says we here, he's talking about him and the small Jewish group that came with him from Persia. He says, we have done our best to buy back our Jewish countrymen who were sold to foreigners. So here he just points out, he's if you could picture this, they're in the middle of this, this torn down city, and the wall is about halfway, getting up there, is up, and he gathers everybody together, and he's just like, hey, I have been working so hard. He's like, we have done our best to buy back the Jewish countrymen, meaning I took my personal money, and I went out to purchase back the Jewish people, some of you, by the way, right, who had sold yourselves into slavery, right, for these loans, and I bought you guys back from the foreigners, from the people who are not one of us, from the non-Jewish people. At the high rate that they made us do, that they made us pay, all right, with the high interest rate. But now you sell your own countrymen. Now you guys are doing this to each other. You're selling each other, and I have to buy them back again. So these wealthy people are getting these people as slaves, right? Because these people owe them money, and then they're taking those people and they're selling them to these foreign people, and the opposition, really the enemies that are around them, they're selling these people back to them so that they could get their money back. And so Nehemiah is like, now I gotta buy them again? I have to repurchase these people that I've already purchased with my own money? And they remained silent. I bet they did. Hard to defend yourself on that. And they could not say a word. They had nothing to say. Then he said, what you are doing isn't right. This is messed up. All right? This should not be happening. You guys are taking advantage of your own people and you're distracting your own people from the work. And so Nehemiah tells him, he says, this is what you guys are to do. All right, you guys need to return everything that you've charged them. And he's talking about the interest. So if you loan somebody, you know, the $100, all right, they still owe you the $100, but you give them back the 50 that you took for them, all right? You give them back the interest. And remember, these poor people at this point, they had no money. There was no good economy going on. It was all in shambles. And so in this case, they had to return the fields, the farms, the homes, all right, and the children back to the Jewish people. And these guys responded, and they said, we will do it. Right? They have no response. They have no defense for why they're doing what they did. And he says, we will return these things, and we will require nothing more from them. We will do as you say. Now, Nehemiah, he ain't convinced. All right, so what he does is he gathers the priests, and he made everyone take an oath to do this, right? This would have been like the modern day version of swearing on the Bible or something like that. So he's like, all right, so you promise me you'll do it. He gathers all the people around. He's like, get a priest or two in here. All right, you got to make this promise in front of them, because that's real bad if you lie in front of them. And so he gathers them all in, and he makes them swear, and they do it, and they give everything back. And so crisis averted. All right, Nehemiah takes care of us and care of this, and everyone returns to building the wall. And so he's got this, last week he had this external issue, that threat that he had to take care of. Now this week there's the unity is being stretched, and so he's got to take care of this. But in the meantime, what's going on outside the walls is still a threat and still opposition that are going to be coming up against him. And it says, when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arab, remember these guys? No? Okay. All right. Well, we talked about them last week. He says, these guys and the rest of our enemies, when they heard that I rebuilt the wall and that no gap was left in it, all right, so we're getting close to the end of this thing. Okay, they almost got it. The wall is done. There's no gap left in it. Though at the time, he says, I had not installed the doors to the city gates. So it's not completely finished, but we are getting close. He says, at that time, Sanballat and Geshem sent me a message, and they said, hey, Nehemiah, maybe we got off to the wrong foot. Okay, or on the wrong foot. He says, let's meet together in the villages of the Ono Valley. All right, let's reconcile here. Let's get everybody together. Let's figure this thing out. We don't need to be enemies. We could be friends. All right, let's get everybody together and let's just have a quick meeting. Now, this could have been viewed, I mean, it was, as an opportunity for Nehemiah to talk, right, or to argue his case, or to ever get everybody on the same page. This was an opportunity for peace. All right, for Nehemiah personally, this would have been an opportunity for him to build his brand or to network with some other leaders or to get his name out there. See, that's the thing about opportunities. Many of our opportunities are actually disguised distractions that distract us from what's most important. See, every single one of us, we're all tempted to do the same thing. Okay, we're tempted to opt for what we want now, right, versus what's best. We are tempted to opt for the immediate over the long term, to work late over the dinner with family and kids, right, or our kids' sports over church, or comfort over the thing that God wants you to do, whatever that might be for you in your life. See, for me, like I already mentioned, I love spending time out in my garage. Okay, someday I'm gonna move to a different house. I'm gonna upgrade it to a shop, because a man should have a shop, and that's sweet, okay? But I'm not there yet. That's a dream someday. But I love spending time in my garage. That's gonna have to do for now. It's like my space, okay? I don't have anybody telling me this should go here and we should do this over there. I do that myself, all right? It's something that I enjoy. But sometimes when I'm out there, like yesterday, what I gotta remember is that my priority is inside the house. Meaning my priority is my family, not what I'm doing out here. Sometimes we've got to remember that. See, for you, it might be something different, okay? And for you, it might be work, or the golf course, or the athletic fields, or the woods, or the meetings, or maybe it's just on your phone. See, none of those things are bad things, all right? None of those are like sin. It's not like the Bible's, you know, you can't do that. It's nothing like that. But they're often distractions from what's really important in our life. And so here what we see is that Nehemiah, he has a choice to make. Does he take this opportunity, or is this just another distraction from the wall? And then it gets easy to make that choice, because he finds out that they were planning to harm me. By the way, all right, if you ever have an enemy that invites you to a valley to talk called Ono, don't go.
okay? That's pre. But what did we see last week? All right, these guys tried to discourage the workers, and they were like semi-successful. But now what they're doing is they're going after the leader, and they're trying to kill him. So these messengers, they arrive to the wall, and Nehemiah is a great leader. And what's he doing? All right, where's he at when these messengers come? He's on the wall. All right, he's working. And they give Nehemiah the message, and this is how Nehemiah replies. He says, I am doing important work. I can't come down. He's like, I got too much going on up here. I'm doing important work. I cannot come down. See, some of us, what we need to do when we are faced with opportunities that are not as good, maybe as, or not as important as the work that we're currently doing, we need to learn to say no. Imagine that, right? Some of us, we are not good at saying no. All right, you're a yes man, you're a people pleaser. It's just like, oh no, I'll figure it out. You know, some of us, when it comes to the different opportunities that are presented to us throughout our life, we need to learn to say no. Can we try it real quick? Got jokes. That's happened every service. So I'm like, yeah, why do I keep doing that? And like walk into this trap, all right? But let's do, try it real quick. I'm gonna count to three and let's just say no, all right? One, two, three. No. Doesn't that feel good? All right, kind of feels good a little bit. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. Sometimes my kids, they run up and they're asking me something I do not care about. Like, Dad, can we go do this? I'm like, no. And I just walk away. See ya. You know, I don't have any reason. I'm just like, I think it's good for you to sometimes hear the word no. You know what I mean? Just to remind you who's in charge. You know, that type of thing. So it's good for us sometimes, depending on the thing, okay, it's good for us to say no, some of us, we need to learn how to do that. By the way, do not say maybe when you mean no. That just messes you all up, okay? It's almost like lying, you know what I mean? It's like, no, it's not a maybe, it's a no. And so that's what Nehemiah says here. He's up on the wall, and he just says no. I mean, he says, I'm doing important work, and I cannot come down. And then he asks, why should the work cease? Why should the work stop while I leave it and I go down to you? Right? In other words, he's saying, why should I lower myself to do something that's less important? All right, see, Nehemiah, what he's doing is he's thinking, all right, about this opportunity, and what he realizes is something that we all need to realize on a more consistent basis. What he realizes is that when we choose to be distracted, or when we choose to take that opportunity that has nothing to do with what really matters, or when we choose to do what is good over what's best, what we're actually doing is we are sacrificing our more important work to do something less. Again, the things that I get distracted by are never as important as the thing that I get distracted from. See, when we are faced with distractions, maybe we need to ask ourselves the same question. Maybe we need to ask ourselves, why should I lower myself to do something of less importance? See, just because you could doesn't mean you should. And as you can imagine, this is not the answer that the enemies want to hear. And so four times, he says, they sent me the proposal. Four times over and over and over again. All right, they have to get him off that wall, whatever it takes. All right, they're like, hey, well, okay, so you can't do it this week. What about next weekend? All right, what about the week after that? Hey, why don't you check your calendar? Just let us know when you're free, Nehemiah. All right, we just want to talk. We just want to meet. And by the way, what they don't understand is that this is not a scheduling conflict. This was a priority conflict. And so each time, Nehemiah, he gives them the same reply. He's like, no, you don't understand. I am doing important work. I'm doing important work, and I cannot come down. All right, I'm doing important work, and I cannot come down, over and over and over again. He gives them the same reply. And so Sanballat, kind of the ringleader behind all this, he says he sent me the same message a fifth time, so time number five, by his aide, who this time had a letter in his hand. Now, this letter read, as Nehemiah reads this letter along with this invitation, all right, this letter is written by Sanballat himself, and he says, hey, Nehemiah, I just want to let you know there's some rumors going on out here, out where we are, kind of on the outskirts. All right, the rumors are that you guys are building this wall to actually rebel against Persia, all right, and you, Nehemiah, want to crown yourself as king. Right? So that's the rumors going on. And so we just want to let you know we need to talk about this. And so if you don't come meet with us, then we are going to have to tell King Artaxerxes that you are building this city to rebel against him and that you are going to crown yourself as king. See, what they're doing is they're threatening him. Because there is a really good chance that if King Artaxerxes hears that they're rebuilding this city, they're going to rebel, and he's going to do this, then this wall-building thing is over, and Nehemiah is dead because the Persians took rebelling extremely seriously. And so Nehemiah replies, he says, there is nothing to these rumors. He's like, that's all these are, rumors that you are spreading, not other people, and you are inventing them in your own mind. All right, you're making it up. You're lying. For they were all trying to intimidate us, he's telling us, he's saying. All right, he said that they said they will drop their hands from the work and it will never be finished. We just have to threaten them and get them off that wall. And so what does Nehemiah do? He ignores them. He doesn't let it distract him. And he, again, with a tool in one hand and a sword in the other hand, he continues the work. In fact, later, all right, what they do is they hire one of Nehemiah's own guys, a prophet, and a guy who lives in Jerusalem, and they hire this guy to come tell Nehemiah, saying, hey, Nehemiah, Sanballat is coming, and they're coming to kill you right now, and so you need to stop building the wall. You need to come with me. I will hide you further into the city. And Nehemiah looks at that dude, and he's just like, I will not go. It's the same idea. I am doing important work up here, and I cannot come down. And the Jewish people in Nehemiah, they work and they pray and they pray and they work. And eventually the wall was completed in 52 days. They finish. See, what I like about this is that there were no miracles happening here. Right, the rocks just didn't fall into the right place. That'd be nice, right, if those types of things happened in our life. This was not a supernatural thing. Right, this happened because of good leadership, hard work, and confidence in God. See, Nehemiah is just an ordinary guy. He was no leader. He was no spiritual leader. He was no priest or pastor type figure. Right, he was no contractor. He'd never done masonry work before. He probably never even carried a rock before. Right, in his life. I mean, this dude, his profession was he was an advisor. Right, he worked inside. He worked in the palace of the king. So he didn't know anything about this stuff. He's just an ordinary guy. But he says, when all our enemies heard this, and all the surrounding nations, he says, they were the ones intimidated. These were the people who were trying to intimidate them. These were the people who were mocking them. These are the people who were trying to stop them at all costs. He says, instead, they were the ones intimidated, and they lost their confidence, for they realized that this task had been accomplished by our God. See, who accomplishes it? Who does Nehemiah point to? It's God. See, God's the one who gave them courage. God's the one who gave them the strength to keep working. Just an ordinary guy who knelt down to pray and stood up to act. See, that's the thing. If you're doing life right, 100%. It's coming. If you're not experiencing it right now, like it's coming, right? You will, 100%, you will face opposition. Is on his way. See, Nehemiah, for him, he had these guys making fun of the wall. What's he do? He keeps building, he keeps moving forward. Right? They mock him, he keeps building and moving forward. They threaten to attack him, he keeps building, he keeps moving forward. They try to trick him and murder him, he keeps building and moving forward. Instead of Nehemiah getting depressed or distracted, it's at the end, the enemy, they're the ones who are distressed because they realize that God was with the Jewish people. See, we have so many invitations in life, so many opportunities. All throughout our life, it's just constant. And they're all mostly good. See, the choice for us most of the time is not good versus bad. That'd be easy. The choice is many times is good versus best, wise versus unwise. See, there are many things that you can do, but the question is, what is it you should do? And what do we see throughout the story? Like, what's he do? How does he decipher through these choices? Well, the first thing he does each and every time is he goes to God. Right? He's got this relationship with God, and God's not helping him out supernaturally. There's no miracles or anything. God has him do the work. I mean, it is hard for him. I mean, there's a drought going on, stuff beyond Nehemiah's control that God was in full control of. So Nehemiah goes to God, number one. It's his go-to thing. It's both spiritual and practical. But then he also worked hard, and he also made plans, and he inspired people, and he ignored opposition the best that he could, and he said no to anything less. See, so often we get distracted by all types of things. And the things that we get distracted by are never as important as the thing we get distracted from. So when we're faced with distractions, which are oftentimes disguised as opportunities, we need to learn to say no. We need to learn to think this way. We need to learn, I am doing an important work and I cannot come down. I am doing an important work and I cannot come down. Or we need to ask ourselves, why should I lower myself to do something of less importance? Why? See, the last 4 weeks, we have walked through the story of Nehemiah, and we've been thinking about the hard work that God had. We've been talking about the hard work that God had for him to do in his life. And the whole idea as a church, as we've been walking through this, is to get us ready for our next step that we're going to be talking about just next week. That we as a church family have a lot of work that we have to do. And so the goal is and the hope is over the next year or two or three or four, as we are doing things that, I'll be honest, feel impossible, that we'll be able to look back at this man who lived 2,500 years ago, and we'll be able to take some of the things and take some of the examples that he gave us of how to deal with not just opposition, right, but how to deal with all the problems when problems arise, how to lead, and how to keep working. So we have a lot to do as a church together, as a church family, all three, almost four campuses. We have a lot of work ahead of us. And again, some of it feels impossible. We're going to talk about that in our new series next week for the next few weeks. So make sure you are back here next week as we talk about what we as a church family in our story, now that it's our turn, what God has for us to do. Let's pray. God, we thank you for the story, for this example that you've given us. One of my favorite stories in the Bible, and we didn't do it justice because we just didn't have enough time, but God, we thank you for it, and we thank you for giving us Nehemiah as an example. Someone that always, always, always went to you first, but then he also coupled that with the practicalness and the fact that he was always working. He didn't just pray and forget. He prayed and he worked. God, we ask that we would do the exact same thing, that we would live the same way, that we'd use him as an example to walk the way that you have called us to walk. And Lord, we thank you for everything that you've given us. We thank you for this church that you've given us and our church family, honestly, across Northwest Ohio. And we thank you for that. And we ask for your help. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.